Haryom to all of you, and Kongi Pachori. So good you all could make it during the holidays. Okay, last week when we met, we have covered up to verse number 6, right? Okay, let us just recap what we have covered. This chapter 3 is entitled Karma Yoga, and it begins with a question from Arjuna. And Arjuna's question is based on the teachings that Sri Krishna gave in chapter 2. And we have discussed so far that chapter 2 contains all the essential teachings of Bhagavad Gita. And teachings given in chapter 2 also conform to the teachings of the Vedas. The Karma Yoga that Krishna taught in chapter 2 is from the Karma Kanda portion of the Vedas. And the Jnana Yoga that Krishna taught in chapter 2 is from the Jnana Kanda portion of the Vedas. Hence, whatever knowledge that Krishna wanted to give was already covered in chapter 2. But there was a doubt in Arjuna's mind. Why did this doubt come about? If we look at chapter 2, verse 48, page 46. At the very first line of verse 48, Yogastha Kuru Karmani. Kuru, Arjuna, as Krishna is telling Arjuna, when he is explaining to him about the concept of Karma Yoga, he is telling Arjuna, Kuru, perform what? Karmani, your duty. Perform your duty with what attitude? Yogastha. Yogastha means to be established on the path of Karma Yoga. And what was this path of Karma Yoga? He has already explained in the previous verse, verse 47, which we discuss is the very essential verse of the philosophy of Karma Yoga. So Krishna said, understand this philosophy of Karma Yoga and apply it in all your duties, in all your actions. Hence, he is telling Arjuna, go and do your duty and fight this battle. Then, at the end of chapter 2, verse 72, which is on page 57, Krishna said, it is only the Sthita Prajna. Sthita Prajna means the one who is endowed with spiritual wisdom, the self-realized one, the Jnani. Only such a person who has gone through the path of Jnana Yoga, while living, what is the state of such a person? Krishna said that such a person is in Brahma Sthiti. Brahma Sthiti means one who has an unshaken peace of mind. Because he is absorbed in his knowledge, he is endowed with his knowledge, and he is able to meet all the challenges, the ups and downs of this world, because he has this knowledge. And thus he is in the state of Brahma Sthiti. He is in a state of unshaken peace of mind. That is while living. What the scriptures refer to as Jivan Mukta. And what happens when he dies? Antakale, when the time comes for his death, Krishna says, Brahma Nirvanam Richati. Richati means he will attain the merger with that Supreme Consciousness, Brahma Nirvanam. That means there is no more cause for another birth. So now, hearing about these two parts, Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga, in chapter 3, verse 1 now, Arjuna expresses a doubt. He questions Krishna that Again and again you tell me, go and do my duty. And that also, what type of duty? Not a pleasant duty. A duty that involves me to kill the very people whom I love, the very people whom I worship. So he calls it Karmani Ghori. Ghori means terrible. Karmani duty. Such a terrible duty you are urging me again and again to go and do, and my mind is already troubled. Just the thought of killing these people whom I love, Bhishma Pita, my beloved grandfather, Dronacharya, my beloved guru, people who I should be worshipping, the very thought of killing them, I have not even killed them, that thought alone is already disturbing me. And yet you are telling me, go and fight, go and kill them. So how will I be able to gain any peace of mind? Because even when I kill them, I gain victory in this battle. I will get back my kingdom. I will get back all the comfort and pleasures of my kingdom. But their very blood will stain my hand. So how can I even enjoy my life after this? And yet you tell me that on the path of Jnana Yoga, I can get peace of mind. I will eventually get moksha. So then why do you urge me to go and do this action, which will only give me more trouble in my mind? Why not I leave this battlefield, pursue sannyasa, gain this Jnana Yoga knowledge, and I attain peace of mind? So I cannot understand. And in verse number 2 also, Arjuna uses the same line of argument. When he explains to Krishna, he is not accusing Krishna of confusing him. We have discussed this. He is not saying, Krishna, you are a confusing teacher. Why can we conclude that Arjuna is not accusing Krishna of being a confusing teacher? How do we conclude this?
Humility.
And how else can we conclude from this very verse that he is not accusing Krishna or confusing him? Because he is still leaving it to Krishna to tell him which path should I follow. If he has no confidence, if he has no faith in Krishna, he wouldn't even ask him. He'll say, I've heard enough, now I'll decide what I want to do. But in verse number 2 he says, now you tell me definitely which path is good for me. Whether I should do my duty and fight this battle, will that give me the highest good, meaning moksha? Or should I leave this battlefield and pursue the path of Jnana Yoga? That will give me moksha. Please tell me. You decide for me. Because why? I am already confused. So don't tell me this, don't tell me that. I don't want to hear anymore. Just give me a decision which one is better, which one is best. And does Krishna give him the answer? Does Krishna decide for him? No. Why does Krishna not decide for him? Sorry? We have the free will to decide. So we have to gain the knowledge, use the knowledge, because we have the intellect to attain knowledge. We have the intellect to decide what is right and what is wrong. And ultimately, whatever we decide and do, we have to be responsible for our actions. That's why at the end of chapter 18, after having delivered the whole discourse to Arjuna, Krishna gives him one last advice. He says, Yatha ichhasi tatha kuru. Kuru means do, tatha as, yatha ichhasi, as you wish. I have given you the knowledge, I have equipped you with the knowledge, now it is time for you to decide what you want to do. Whether you want to follow my instruction or whether you want to do something else. So there is freedom to choose. So instead of deciding, making a decision for Arjuna, what does Krishna do? He now, from this verse 3 onwards, he elaborates the whole path of Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga again. The teachings which he had already completed in chapter 2, in the chapters 3 to 17, Krishna will elaborate again the whole concept of Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga. That's why you will find a lot of repetition. You will find a lot of things you may already know, and you may ask why you keep on repeating the same thing again and again. And I will tell you that students forget last week's lesson, so repetition is very, very necessary. Right? Okay, so what does Krishna do? He says in verse number 3, Loke Asmin Dvivida Nishta. Loka, in this world, it is true that I have given two parts. Dvivida is two, which is plural, but very careful to note, Nishta is one. That means what? There is only one path that leads to salvation, but on this one path, there are two sections. There is a Karma Yoga and there is a Jnana Yoga. There are no two separate paths. This was Arjuna's confusion, because he thought, between Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga, I have a choice. I can decide which one I want. But what Krishna wants to say, between Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga, you have no choice. Everybody has got to go through Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga, and that also in which order? First Karma Yoga to? Why is Karma Yoga necessary? Prepare the mind, to purify the mind. Prepare the mind for what? For Jnana Yoga, for Jnanam. And with Jnanam, you attain knowledge, realize your real self, engage in meditation and attain moksha. So this is what Krishna wants to explain, that in this world, there are only two parts. There is one part, but there are two sections. Then the question will arise, why are there so many sadhanas? Why are there so many types of gurus, so many types of temples, so many types of sadhanas? When Krishna said there is only Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, why are there so many types of sadhanas? This fellow says this guru is better, that fellow says this guru is better, somebody said Hatha Yoga better, Surya Yoga better, Kundalini Yoga better. Why are there so many sadhanas? What is the reason that there are so many sadhanas?
Because of so many different people. Everybody wants to make their own choice.
Right.
Many parts.
So because of our own inherent nature, we should not get confused. We should not compare with others that this person seems to be progressing by this sadhana. He seems to be progressing faster than me, so I should jump to that sadhana. Every sadhana, there are varieties of sadhana, varieties of gurus, varieties of even devas also, there are varieties of them. There is no such thing as a better sadhana, better guru or whatever. Every sadhana is designed only for one purpose. And what is that purpose? To purify yourself. So, every sadhana has got only one aim, that is to purify yourself. It does not matter which sadhana you choose, but choose the sadhana which you find is suitable to your own inherent nature. And follow that. Be very firm on that. Don't get misled and run in 10 or 20 different directions looking for a perfect sadhana, perfect guru, perfect temple, perfect deity. So, all these sadhanas fall under Karma Yoga. How do we know that? If you look at chapter 4, verse 33, page 94, you will understand this. Chapter 4, verse 33, page 94. Especially the last two lines in Sanskrit given there. Sarvam karma, all the karmas, meaning all the sadhanas that you are doing, whichever sadhana you are doing, akhilam, without exception, jnane parisamapyate. Parisamapyate means they will culminate in jnana. So it doesn't matter which sadhana you pick, which karma you do, whether you do dhanam, whether you do prayers, whether you chant mantras, whether you do yoga, whatever you do, they are all designed to purify your mind and prepare you for jnana. They will all culminate in the jnana yoga path. So there is no need to get confused, there is no need to compare, but follow the path that suits your own sentiment, that suits your own personality. So, since Krishna said that there is only one path and there are two sections to the same path, what are the two paths? Jnana Yogena Samkhyana, verse number 3, Karma Yogena Yogena. So there are only two paths. And first, what does Krishna do? Therefore, from verse 4 onwards, he will talk about the glory of Karma Yoga. He will explain to us why we should go on this path of Karma Yoga. So in verses 4, 5 and 6, which we covered last week, we'll briefly just go through this. First of all, we must understand that when we initially start on the spiritual path, there are many impurities in our mind, isn't it? We have envy, pride, jealousy, ego, anger. There's so many impurities in our mind. Now, what he says in verse number 4, Na karmanam anaramban naishkarmyam. He talks about this path of naishkarmya. The word naishkarmya means freedom from action. He's saying, by abstaining from work, by abstaining from your duty, you do not gain freedom from action. Why is that? Because whatever impurities we have in our mind cannot be overcome by refraining from action. If I have certain impurities in me, just by refraining myself, I think that these impurities will go away. They are not going to go away because they are in our mind. So, the state of actionlessness means what? At the physical level, I can restrain myself. I can control myself and not do many things. But how do I take care of this? But how do I take care of this mind? How do I take care of the activity of the mind? So what is telling us in the first instance is, it is only by doing action you are going to be able to handle the what we call the impurities in your mind. Example, if I have an attitude of a miser, let's say I have this attitude, I'm a miser, I have a lot of money, but I don't like to give money. How am I going to overcome this attitude? How am I going to overcome this attitude? By doing charity, isn't it? It may pain you in the beginning. Giving even 1 ringgit, 2 ringgit might pain you. But as you go on giving, then only you find the joy of giving until you overcome that miserly attitude. That means what? By restraining my action, I'm not going to overcome my miserly attitude. It is only by performing the right action can I counter-react the negative attitude in me. So what he's saying is that man does not attain freedom from action by abstaining from work. So you have to engage in the right action with the right attitude in order to overcome these impurities in your mind. That is the first advice he gives us. Second advice he says in the same verse 4 that Nacha Samnyasanat. Just by taking up sannyasa, that means by renouncing the world, we think by, you know, in fact we look at Swamijis, we think they are the most luckiest people. Nothing to do, get up early in the morning, chant some mantras, people invite you for breakfast, lunch, dinner, even at night you go to sleep by 9 o'clock. Very wonderful life. No responsibility, nothing at all. But here what Krishna is saying, if you just renounce everything, it is still not going to give you what he says, siddhim. The state of siddhi means the state of perfection. The state of perfection can only be attained through jnanam, through knowledge. And you cannot get knowledge if you have not purified the mind. So merely by giving up everything, renouncing the world and going away and taking sannyasa, you are not going to gain this state of perfection. Because why? You have not purified the mind. Your mind will keep running back again. You may run away from everything, but you cannot run away from your mind. And he gives the reason in the very next verse, verse number 5, when he says, Sarva Prakati Jair Gune. Because of these gunas, the three gunas which are in all of us, Sattva, Rajas and Tamas, they are the ones which are driving our actions. And where are the gunas? They are in your mind, they are in your intellect. How we think, how we respond to situation, it is all because of these three gunas. Your physical body is governed by these three gunas. What type of actions you do is governed by these three gunas. So, that's why the sadhanas which are designed for us, there are to promote us from tamasic guna, you go to rajasic guna. How do you do that? How do you push a person from tamasic to rajasic guna? Because the lowest guna is the tamasic guna. How do you push the person from tamas to rajas? That means through karma yoga, isn't it? By engaging the person in service. So we find there are many sadhanas in our scriptures. They say go and do dhanam, go and do seva, go and do all kinds of actions. The reason being is that to push you up from tamas to rajas. Then from rajas to sattva by from rajas to sattva, from tamas to rajas by karma yoga, bhakti, or we call upasana. Upasana means worship. So by worship you move from rajas to sattva. How does it work? Because in worship you try to focus your mind, you try to bring your mind to focus on the deity or god or whatever you're worshipping. So the rajasic gunas also get diluted through this pure concentration of the mind on God. Then when you attain the sattvic state, is that okay? Mm-hmm. Have you finished all your sadhanas? Mm-hmm. What do you have to do now?
Gunatit.
In chapter 14, the question is put by Arjuna. How do I transcend all the three gunas? That means eventually we have to transcend tamas, we have to transcend rajas, even sattva also we have to transcend. Why? He will explain in chapter 14. How do you transcend sattva? Only through jnana yoga. So hence the three parts which are given in the Bhagavad Gita, the karma yoga, upasana yoga and jnana yoga, are for us to move from tamas to rajas, rajas to sattva, and eventually transcend all the three gunas. So here Krishna is saying, by avoiding duty, by running away from duty, by looking at, and normally what type of duty do we avoid? It is not pleasant duty, it's always unpleasant duty that we want to run away. But do you think, why do you find the duty unpleasant? Why do you find the duty unpleasant? For example, if I have a spouse who's constantly nagging me, why do I find it unpleasant? I'm working both ways. I'm not saying only one side is nagging. Either or can nag, either way. But why do I find it unpleasant?
Expectation.
Why do I find it unpleasant? Okay, let me put it another way. What is that quality lacking in me?
Patience.
Patience, isn't it? That means what? That patience is my impurity. And every impurity that I have is what? Every impurity in me, what is the problem? Whether it's patience or anger or greed, whatever it is, what detriment does it cause to me? It is my barrier to spiritual growth, isn't it? Every impurity that you have is a barrier to your spiritual growth. And that impurity is in your mind. So when that situation arises, if I am the type of person who's impatient, I have to, through this life, find a way how to deal with my impatience. Because what does Vedanta tell us? You cannot change everything in the external environment. But what can you change? Your internal equipment to meet every challenge. So if I am a person who is prone to anger, then I have to deal with it. I have to find a way how to deal with it. Because if I can't deal with it, it will become a barrier to my spiritual growth. Thus, the householder life should not be discounted. That's why the householder life is called what? Grihas?
Ashram.
It is also called ashram. Why is it called ashram? It's also a place to learn and grow spiritually. That means every challenge there also, family challenge, social challenges, from all aspects, it helps me to grow. I must look at the situation in my workplace, in my house, in my society. How do I interact with society? And if I am affected, how should I overcome that impurity in me? If I can grow spiritually in that grihas ashram, then for me to progress to sannyas is a very natural progression. There is no disturbance in my mind. So that's why Krishna says, you don't run away, you do your duty, because the gunas will eventually drive you. If you have rajasic gunas, you are a soldier, you run away to ashram, what are you going to do? You're going to fight with everybody there. Why? Because the gunas are driving you. You have that kind of passion in you. You will eventually end up fighting with everybody. So he says, use that quality and do your duty with the right attitude. Then finally he tells him in verse number 6, he says that if you decide to just restrain karmendriyani samyamya. Karmendriyas are our organs of action. The organs that we use to respond to the world, hands, legs, etc. He says, merely by samyamya, merely by restraining your organs of action, and manasa smaran, manasa means your mind, is smaran, is running all over the world. Not only that, your mind is a bundle of frustration, anger, agitation, turbulence. Just by restraining your organs of action, but you cannot settle your mind, you sit there and you are not doing anything, but your mind is in total turbulence. Krishna says what? You get two titles for this. You get two bonus for this. One is, Krishna says, you are a mithyachara, means you are a total hypocrite. Because you are only restraining the physical body, but you are not able to bring your mind under your control. You do not have mastery of mind. You only have mastery over your physical body. And eventually, if you cannot control your mind, what is going to happen? If that anger, agitation, frustrations are driving you in your mind, and you try to suppress them, what is going to happen? That's what happens when that person wakes up in the morning, takes a gun and goes and shoots 30 people a day. Isn't it? Somewhere it's going to explode out. So, he's saying you are a mithyachara, you are a hypocrite, and on top of that, you are a vimudhatma. You are a deluded person. You are cheating yourself and you are cheating society. You are not progressing at all spiritually. So now, obviously, the question will come. Okay, if these gunas are in me, and I have to do some kind of action, I have to do my duties, how do I do them in the right way that I can progress spiritually, that I can purify myself and then progress to Jnana Yoga? So how do I do that? For that Krishna says, don't worry, read verse number 7. So in verse number 7, he gives us the technique of Karma Yoga. What is the technique of Karma Yoga? And then in this very beautiful verses from 9 onwards, he will tell us what is the glory of Karma Yoga. Why should one take to Karma Yoga? And there are three glories in Karma Yoga, which I briefly mentioned to you last week. The first glory of Karma Yoga is that which is given in verse number 10, when Krishna says, it is the commandment of Lord. When God created this world, He endowed every human being with the with the practice of Karma Yoga. So we will discuss that when we come to verse 10. But the first glory is that it is the commandment of Lord. And who has created this world? God. Who has created this body? God. And along with his creation, he has given us a manual how we should use this body, how we should use this world to grow spiritually. So obviously, we must take the knowledge from the scriptures and learn the purpose of this human birth and how we blend in with this whole environment. So that is the first glory of Karma Yoga. The second glory of Karma Yoga, which he will give in verse number 11 and 12, he will tell us that Karma Yoga is an offering to all the devas. By you doing your action, your duties with the right attitude, is an offering to all the devas. And we will understand later what are the devas all about. And the third glory of Karma Yoga he gives in verse 13 by giving an allegory that one who does Karma Yoga is absolved of all sins. Meaning, in short, Karma Yoga helps you to purify yourself. Purify your body, purify your mind, purify your intellect. What are sins? We will discuss when we come to verse 13. So three glories of Karma Yoga Krishna will also tell. And why tell this? Because, you see, when Arjuna surrendered to Krishna and said, you decide for me whether Karma Yoga is good for me or Jnana Yoga is good, Krishna wants to give him the knowledge so that he can decide for himself. So if I explain to you what is the glory of Karma Yoga and you understand that, it will become more meaningful for you. Rather than Krishna just telling Arjuna, okay, since you told me to decide, you go into Karma Yoga, don't ask any more questions, isn't it? But if I explain the concept, the beauty of Karma Yoga, how I can use this concept in my daily life. Karma Yoga is not only when we go and pray, or when we do rituals, or when we chant mantras. This whole philosophy of Karma Yoga must be brought into our total living. How I deal with my household, how I deal with my, in my workplace, in my community, in my society. If I can bring this concept of Karma Yoga through all my transactions, then only I grow spiritually. So now first let us look at what is Karma Yoga in verse number 7. Here in verse number 7, what Krishna wants to say is that, yes, the word tu is used. If you see the word in verse 7, the first line in Sanskrit, the word TV is there, right? But actually, what it means is TU, tu. Tu means to differentiate that this path of Karma Yoga is totally opposite to what has been described in the previous verse. The person who is the mithyachara, the hypocrite, the person who is deluded, the total opposite of this character now is given in verse number 7. So the word tu is to indicate that it is something which is totally opposite to the selfish type of person or the one who is not on the path of Karma Yoga. So verse 7 is to differentiate that type of individual who is following the path of Karma Yoga. And what does that person do? In the previous verse, he said the person restrains his organs of action. Now he's saying that intelligent person, indriyani niyamya. Indriyani niyamya means he not restrains, but he masters. He is a master of his senses. He does not lead a life of likes and dislikes. Now, what is the problem of leading a life of likes and dislikes? It is not that we cannot have likes and dislikes. All of us are human beings. We have likes and dislikes. We cannot run away from likes and dislikes. But yet, throughout the Gita, Krishna will keep on emphasizing about the dangers of likes and dislikes. Likes are called raga, and dislikes are called dvesha. And because our mind is nothing but a bundle of likes and dislikes, as I explained to you last week, even Swamijis will have likes and dislikes, isn't it? They also have preference. I like to eat this fruit, I don't like this fruit. I like this vegetable, I don't like this vegetable. So what is the problem with likes and dislikes? Sorry?
It takes over the mind.
How does it take over the mind? How do I deal with my likes and dislikes?
Vanity.
Okay, what do you mean by vanity? How do I understand it in a practical way? I have likes and dislikes. I can't help it. I like coffee, I don't like tea. I like dosa, I don't like idli. I have likes and dislikes. How do I deal with it?
You deal with it by telling yourself that, okay, you will not have it. That's all. That means you discipline your mind. For instance, if you like coffee, you'll say you're crazy about coffee. So next day you just wake up and tell you, okay, from today I'm just stopping the coffee. And then you just stop and see that finally you're not attached to it.
See, then we are coming back to repression. We must be very careful. Control here means not giving in, simply giving in, because I like coffee means I go 10 times to Starbucks every day. Or repression, I won't go for 1 month to Starbucks. Either way is dangerous. We have discussed we must have mastery, which means what? I must learn to convert my likes and dislikes into preferences. If I go to somebody's house and that person says, I have no coffee, can I offer you tea? Fine, I accept it. That means I must not allow the situation to affect me. I have to learn to accept what I like and what I dislike also. They should not rule my life. If I have a like for coffee, I'll take. But if you don't have coffee, if you offer me tea, I take. So likes and dislikes must not overrule our life. We have to learn to accept them. So here what he's saying here is that indriyani niyamya, not restrain. Actually the word here restrain is not correct. It should be mastery of the senses. And how can you gain mastery of the senses? Only through your mind. If you are able to discipline the mind. Because ultimately it is a mind that has to control the senses. So how do I discipline the mind? Very important is, when we talk about mind here, a bit of intelligence has to be used to guide the senses. Everything that I interact with the world, whatever I interact with the world, I have to be very aware what I'm doing. If I give in to every desire, it's also very dangerous. So I must learn how to question my desires also. For example, three questions that we should always ask ourselves when we have any desire. To have the desire is not wrong. But the failing to question the desire, that's when the problem starts. What are the three questions we should ask ourselves when we have a desire? Number one, is it legitimate? Is it a legitimate desire? Am I violating any laws? Is it a legitimate desire? And legitimate means also dharmic. According to the scriptures, I'm following my life as what is advised in the scriptures. I'm not going against the scriptures. Number two, is it moral? In society, I have to be there. So, is it moral what I'm doing also, that desire? Okay. Let's say it is legitimate. Let's say it's moral. What is the third question you should ask yourself? Let's say it's a legitimate desire. It's a moral desire. What is the third question I should ask myself?
Do you need it?
Huh?
Whether you need it.
Whether you need it. Everything we need. Even it. Whatever it is, we can convince ourselves that we need it. Let's say you can afford it.
Whether you can live without it.
You can live without it. Truth.
Make me happier. No, desire in the sense that, you see, when you are talking about desire, whether this is going to be a higher desire, like for example, in the morning I mean given a concoction of a very, very bitter juice.
Okay.
So this juice is actually in the earlier stages is a very difficult thing to take. But soon I realized that this actually helps me.
Okay.
So when I felt that it helped me, I don't feel the taste anymore.
Okay.
I drink it because I feel
the right understanding.
It is I understand that it is good for me. So I suppose if you're looking at it, it's how we think whether the desire is beneficial to you. in a higher way than in the lower way.
True. See, the third question, which we all must ask ourselves, is it in excess? Is it in excess? You want to go and watch a movie? No problem. But you want to watch movie 5 times a week? Then it becomes a problem. Because why? Everything that you do in excess is also means taking away time from your spiritual activities. So is it legitimate? Is it moral? Is it in excess? This is something that the mind has got to constantly question. Then if it is there, okay. That is not, it is not said that a person who is on the spiritual path cannot enjoy life. But as long as you are on the path of dharma, you are not breaking any rules, any moral rules, any dharmic rules, and it is not in excess, by all means, enjoy life. Because those are the desires that are driving us. We cannot constrain all desires. So here what Krishna is saying, you engage in action, do all your duties, but have some control over your senses, some mastery with the mind. And again, when we say mastery, it's not suppression, it is not expression, but it is diversion. We have to divert the mind. We have to, as brother said just now, you have to divert your mind to higher, what we call higher goals in life, to more pure goals in life, to more what we call uplifting goals in life. So desire is not wrong. One, it should not affect us. Number two, we should be in control of it, that we should direct our desires to higher goals in life. So here Krishna says here that one who engages in action and controls or disciplines the senses with the mind, and what type of action does he do? In the third line, verse 7, look at the second word, karma yoga, with the attitude of karma yoga. And karma yoga, he will explain slowly in chapter 3, but we have understood briefly that karma yoga is what? Doing your duty without expectation, without attachment. And he uses the same word here again in the fourth line, asakta. Asakta means without attachment. Another word for attachment is, how do you quickly understand attachment? What do we mean by when we say attachment? Don't perform all action with detachment. How do we quickly understand, what do you mean by attachment?
It gives you pain.
Cannot let go. So there's one simple word that will define attachment, and that is called dependence. Because through your action, you are dependent on the result for your happiness. You are dependent on something external which is beyond your control. That's why in chapter 2, verse 47, he says, karma nevadhikaraste. Your right is to perform action. You have every ability given to you. Free will has been given to you to decide on the course of action. But the ability to decide on the result of your action has not been given to you. If I take a bow and arrow, simple example to understand. I put an arrow on the bow. As long as the arrow is in my hand, I have total control over it, isn't it? I can choose where I want to point it to. I can choose the target, everything. I can choose the target, I can choose where I want to point the arrow to. But once the arrow is left from my hand, then do I have any control, total control about where the arrow is going? Wind direction can change, the arrow can go off somewhere else. Laws of gravity are there, so many factors, even the target can move somewhere else, right? If I'm shooting a deer or something, the target can move away. I don't have total control once the action has left my hand. So he is telling us that your happiness should not be dependent on the result. Then where do I find my happiness? In my action. Find joy in your action. We are postponing our joy to, we want happiness, but we postpone our joy to later day. So when are you happy? When you want to be happy, now or later? now. But when are you actually being happy? Later. And that also, the result also, the consequence of your happiness is also not in your hands. So that's why the whole philosophy of Karma Yoga is find the joy in action. The mere reason that I can perform my action, the reason why I'm performing action is why to a Karma Yogi? Why am I performing action? Okay, it's my duty, but what is the ultimate reason I'm performing action? Purify myself, right? So why do I look at the results? If I do my duty with the right attitude, am I not getting what I want? Am I not getting purity of mind? If I am a Karma Yogi, through every action, I am not looking at the external results, I am looking at my internal results. So why am I bothered about external results, which are going to come anyway, which are not in my control anyway? But what I am interested in is how do I purify myself? How through every action I can uplift myself? So I find joy in the action itself, with the right attitude. So, Karmendriya Karma Yogam. Engage your karmendriyas. In the previous verse he said, one who restrains his karmendriyas, organs of action. Here he is saying, perform, use your physical body and perform your mind, use it and perform all your actions. But unattached, with detachment. And engage yourself in the path of work. So the philosophy of Karma Yoga is given there. Now in verse number 8, he mentions a new phrase there called Niyatam Karma. Niyatam Karma here has been translated as allotted duty. Now what do we mean by allotted duty? Because all of us have got different types of duties. So what do we mean by allotted duties here? Niyatam Karma, there are four parts of this Niyatam Karma when we talk about allotted duties. So two are supposed to be done and two are supposed to be avoided. So when we talk about Niyatam Karma, this is your allotted duties. What's going on today? Just switch it off. Okay, what is Niyatam Karma? There are two do's and there are two don'ts. The two do's fall under Nitya Karma. Nitya Karma means I have my everyday duties, my daily duties. And all of us have got different duties. Some are married, some are not married, some have elderly parents, some don't have. We have various kind of responsibilities and duties. And especially what we should never give up, that Krishna said, is the Pancha Mahayajnas. You remember we have discussed this before. The five very important yajnas, or what we call duties. I hope all of you remember this, right? We discussed this before, right? So Pancha Maha Yajnas are the daily duties that we owe to the world, to society, to animals, our duty to animals, to environment, etc. We are supposed to take up all these duties on a daily basis. And then all of us have different type of duties to play. Like if I say some are married, you have duty to spouse, to children. Some are bachelors, you have elderly parents to look after. These are what we call fall under your daily duty. And also daily duties include worship to God. That part of worship also is very important. It is part and parcel of our daily duties. And another one also, which is also our daily duties, it's called Swadhyaya. Swadhyaya means daily reading of the scriptures. It is also part and parcel of our daily duties. So Nitya Karmas, when he talks about Niyatam Karma, means do your allotted duty. It includes your daily duties, which are Nitya Karma. Second is what we call Naimittika karma. Naimittika karma means which is done on
special occasion.
On special occasion. Example, when you get married, there are certain rituals and prayers that you do. These are part and parcel of your duties. When there is a child born in the family, there are certain rituals that you do. When you move into a new house, you invoke the blessings of God. So these are done on specific or special occasions. And these falls under niyatam karma, which we must not avoid, which we must all take up. And what are those karmas that we must minimize or avoid? They fall under Nishida karma. Nishida karma is forbidden actions which the scriptures totally forbid. So these are those that we must totally avoid. Example, gambling, alcohol, etc., etc. These are all listed as forbidden actions in our scriptures. Then there is a second type of karma which we must minimize, and that is called kamya karma, which is done for selfish purposes. So minimize kamya karma, avoid nishida karma, and make sure you keep performing nitya and naimittika karmas. That is, all these fall under the niyatam karma. So when we talk about this niyatam karma, we must understand that when we do niyatam karma, that means nitya naimittika karmas, with the right attitude, what happens is that our sattvic gunas are getting stronger and stronger. So the purpose of doing these karmas with the right attitude is to increase our sattvic karmas. Sattvic karmas are those karmas that we do. How do you define sattvic karmas? That benefit more groups of people rather than just benefiting us. So we engage in our duties, but we call it sattvic because it benefits a larger group of people. When you serve society, when you look after your family, or you serve in the company, it benefits a larger group of people. That is called sattvic karmas. Rajasic karmas are those type of karmas where only I benefit, but there is no benefit at all to anybody in society. And that falls mainly under kamya karmas, selfish karmas. So that should be minimized. And what are tamasic karmas? What are tamasic karmas?
Selfish.
Hurting
others. Tamasic karmas are those where you end up hurting others, right? Where you cause some form of destruction or hurt to others. So sattvic karmas will elevate you spiritually. Rajasic karmas, neither do you grow, neither do you fall spiritually. But tamasic karmas is when you have a spiritual downfall. So for that reason here, he is saying, niyatam kuru karmatvam. May you perform your allotted duty. Whatever duties that you find yourself with, do not abandon, do not give up your duties. Perform all your allotted duties. And why he is saying that? He is saying because performance of action is more superior to inaction. And he has already explained to us why inaction will not help us at all. In verse number 4, he has already told us that every performance of action with the right attitude will progress you spiritually, whereas inaction will give you no result at all. And very important here, in the third and fourth line, he says, sarira yatra. There are two words here. Sarira means body. Yatra means what we call maintenance of your body, or how you live. So for the very maintenance of your own body, minimum at least you have to perform action. You have to keep this body healthy. Why do you need to keep this body healthy? So you can perform actions to contribute to society. And by contributing to society, you also grow spiritually. So even for the minimum purpose, you also need to do something to keep your body in the right shape so that you are able to function and do all your duties. And by this performance of duties, you only will gain by advancing yourself spiritually. So the whole concept of Karma Yoga has been given in verses 7 and 8. And now, in verse number 9, he introduces the glory of Karma Yoga by introducing a new word called Yajna, Y-A-J-N-A, Yajna. And this Yajna, to most of us, is the fire ritual that we do, right? We have this fire burning in the Havan Kund, and into this fire we offer ghee, we offer grains, and we chant certain mantras. But when he talks about Yajna here, we must understand the symbolic allegory of Yajna in our daily lives. So what do we mean, or what is the symbolism of this fire sacrifice that we do? What does the fire represent? What do the grains represent? What does the fire represent? We can take this symbolism and understand how to apply it in our daily life. What does the fire represent? You all have done, right? Havan Yajnas. All of you, I'm sure, must have done. Either for house warming or, you know, for whatever purposes. So, what? Sorry?
Oh, Shakti.
He consumes what you offer. So what is the allegorical reference?
Knowledge.
Huh?
Purification.
Purification.
Energy.
The fire represents Agni Devata. It is the god of fire, right? So that means what you're offering, the grains or the ghee, is to Deva, to God, right? And that which you're offering, what does that represent?
Negative qualities.
Okay, you can say negative qualities, but in this context, when we are talking about Karma Yoga, how do we associate Karma Yoga with this Yajna? So, what is it that you're offering to God? Our actions. And since you are offering all types of grains, you offer rice, you offer fruit, you offer different types of grains, that means every action offered to God, what happens at the end of the offering?
Consumed by
itself. It is burned to ashes. In the ashes, can you see which part is ghee, which part is fruit, which part is grain? It all becomes one. Now, what is the significance of that?
Whether it's good actions or bad actions, you offer them all to God and He accepts them. You don't worry about the results.
Whether it's good actions or bad actions?
Actions without expectation.
Actions done with the right attitude, offered to God, end up as burnt, meaning what is burnt cannot generate more fire, isn't it? So what does it tell us here? If I offer all my actions, not only spiritual actions, but even my daily duties, this nitya karma, naimitika karma, if I have that right attitude and perform all my actions and offer everything to God, what is the end result of my action? If my attitude is correct, what is the end result of my action?
It doesn't affect you.
Anything that is ashes cannot burn further. It means your actions will not accumulate any more karmas, because that ashes cannot produce more fire. It cannot produce more activity. But when I do that same action with the wrong attitude, then that keeps on burning and burning and burning. It will keep on producing more and more karmas, more and more effect, karma phalam. So even positive, you see, even when we do donation, even when we do charity, it's a good action. But you don't want the karma phalam. Why?
Come back and enjoy it.
You still have to come back again. So even you do good action, you incur a result, you'll still have to, you'll enjoy the punyam. Right? For that punyam, you have to come back again. And if you do any wrong action, there is a, what we call it, punyam, and there is a papam. You will also have to come back again. So that's why, like Rajasic people, they are very engaged. What we talk about, selfish people who do kamya karma, who are always engaged, running about in the rat race. No time at all, selfish attitude. So it is said that even if you are successful in the rat race, what is the only thing you cannot change? No, we are all involved in the rat race, you know, running around, doing everything. So even if you are most successful in the rat race, what is the thing you cannot change?
You're still a rat.
You're still a rat, isn't it? And when you're a rat, what is your biggest problem? You're always afraid of the cat, which means what? No matter what we achieve, there is always the fear of insecurity in us. That somebody will be better than us, somebody will chase up to us, somebody will overtake us. So people who are running about doing selfish actions, there's always continuous karma, karma phalam, karma, karma phalam. It never ends. But when we surrender all our actions to God, same symbolic as offering everything into the fire to Agni Devata, everything is burnt, becomes ashes, means there is no more further karma. There is no more punyam, there is no more papam also. So the word yajna has been introduced here. It's very symbolic. It represents the fire, what we call fire ritual that we do, but how we can understand this concept and bring it into our totality of actions. So here Krishna says, such actions which are done with the attitude of yajna, what he says, if any actions which are done other than yajna, without this right attitude of yajna, Krishna says, the world is bound by actions other than those performed for the sake of sacrifice. So, there is a karmic effect. When he says bound means, you are expecting something out of the result of your action, and when the result is positive, it affects you. When the result is negative, also it affects you. And what happens? It spurs you on to more action and more action. So, any action done without the attitude of yajna binds a person. In short, we can there's a simple formula to understand this, that every action done with devotion, action plus devotion equals liberation, action minus devotion equals to bondage. Action remains the same. It is only that change in attitude that changes the result. Action plus devotion equals liberation. Action minus devotion equals bondage. So, the emphasis is never on action. It is always on the attitude that drives your action. And therefore, he says, for that reason, Krishna says, do all your actions free from attachment. Mukta Sangha. Mukta means free, Sangha means attachment. Free yourself, your mind from this attachment. And we must always keep in mind that chapter 2 verse 47, which is the essential of Karma Yoga. That will teach us how we should bring this philosophy into Karma Yoga into our daily lives. Okay, I will stop here. Any questions at this stage? Any questions? Yes.
So when an action gives you joy,
right?
Self-taking action gives you joy,
right?
You naturally
naturally want to.